This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I'm back, and I'm Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Coach Jen in Ocala, Florida, too. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for August 27th, episode 732. Good morning, Horse World.
Good Tuesday morning to you, and I do mean a good Tuesday morning.
Well, if you insist on being accurate about it.
You know, only somebody with perfect comedic timing could produce this much energy in one shot.
Well, happy Tuesday, everybody, and welcome back to Horses in the Morning. It's good to be back after I heard what you guys said about me yesterday. All that thing about men whining and all that stuff.
I think you were hallucinating. We had nothing but good things to say.
I heard it, and I posted, I want you to know, I posted on our Facebook page that Red Book Magazine did an entire article on the physiological reasons why men whine, and that there's actually good science behind it. So I posted that to let you guys know that it's not just in our heads.
The scary part about that, Glenn, is that you even know Red Book exists.
I searched long and hard on Google to find an article that would defend myself for being a whiny, sick person. And I wanted to thank also all the listeners who reached out and were concerned that it was my Lyme that was acting up, and it was not. I just had a cold. I probably got it on the airplane heading to Philadelphia last week. So it was just your basic cold, but I did feel like crap. And I'm going to try not to cough in your ears this morning. We're going to do about an hour show for you today because I have four shows to record today, and we're just hoping my voice holds out. But
things here at Horse Radio Network Studios are backed up just a bit right now.
Yes. So thank you for filling in yesterday, Jennifer. You guys did a great job.
It was terrifying. I had sweaty palms for 78 minutes.
I know. It's not your favorite thing to fill in for us, but we do appreciate when you do it.
Well, the joy, though, Glenn, is that Jamie can carry the show all by herself. So the little that made it easier.
Yep, you just wind her up and let her go. She just revs it right up. Well, let's find out what's going on today's show.
On today's Autumn is Just Around the Corner Tuesday edition, we check in with equine photographer extraordinaire Scott Tree to see what he's up to. We haven't heard from him for a while. And following the team's whirlwind tour of the entire polo playing universe, we catch up with Harvard University polo team member Danielle Lucy to see what she's been up to worldwide. And betwixt these fascinating forays into equestrians' interesting lives, we bring you all the news you need to know to chat intelligently around the feed room. So stay tuned for the fray.
Well, I have a fun little daily whinny for everybody today. This has nothing to do with horses, just something, you know, with war threatening over us threatening to be in another war over in Syria, and the Russians and Chinese saying if we do, we're going to be in trouble. And, you know, with all that going on and all the bad things you hear about, I found a website called dailygood.org. And believe it or not, years ago, I used to have a website. Remember when the internet first started, Jennifer, and we were so depressed with all the depressing news? Nothing's changed in the last 15 years. But I had a little website called, what was it called? Good News Today or onlygoodnews.com. And I just rounded up all the good news. It was kind of a Drudge Report for good news. Believe it or not, it was very hard to find it in those days. That blogs weren't as...
I remember you struggling trying to find Yeah.
Just finding one good news story every day was tough. But, you know, it was before blogs were a big thing. And it was, you know, it was tough. It was really a tough. I ran it for about a year and had a lot of faithful followers who liked reading the good news. Well, dailygood.org is that kind of website now. And they highlighted the nine nanas. This is a group of nine women from the ages of about 50 to 70. And they're from Western Tennessee, not too far out of Graceland, actually. They're just to the west of Graceland. And they have for 30 years, well, for 25 years, they had hid a secret from their husbands. What they would get together and play what they called broads and bridge. They would get together and play bridge. Now, you got to remember, this is 30-some years ago, and they were all housewives, and they were just getting together to play bridge once a week. Well, they decided that they wanted to start doing something good for the world. And they were all pretty young then, too. They would have been in their 20s and 30s. And they wanted to do something good for the world, so they decided what they were going to do is start becoming coupon clippers. And all the money they saved, they were going to put into a fund to help people. And they were going to help people anonymously. And that's what they started doing. They started doing clipping coupons and using green stamps. You remember green stamps? Well, they always
I love green stamps.
I know. You and I, when we first met, this is how old we are, we used to sit around and put green stamps in those books and go get stuff at the green stamp store. That's how old we are.
Well, they were essential to survival for young couples.
Yes, exactly. So they always made sure they went shopping at the grocery stores that gave away green stamps and the department stores that gave away green stamps. And they would use the green stamps for the good that they did. And what they would do is, as they were around town, if they heard somebody in line complaining, you know, saying that they just lost their job and couldn't pay a bill or, you know, something like that, they would anonymously pay the bill for them, or they would put a package on their porch at night, and they would put money in it to pay the bill. And what they also did is they included Mama Ruth's. One of the ladies, Mama Ruth, made a pound cake, this special pound cake, and they would make these pound cakes while their husbands were at work. Now, they kept all of this from their husbands. They didn't tell anybody, no one. For 30 years, they kept this a secret. Well, they would do all of this while their husbands were at work. And for three decades, they did this. They would actually drive through neighborhoods, the poorer neighborhoods in their area at night. And if they'd see the lights out or like candles on, they figured that their electric had been turned off. They would contact the electric company and pay the bill for them. They would do things like that. I mean, they were just amazing things. They would go through the neighborhoods at night to the poor families they knew were having trouble, and they would drop these pound cakes off on their porches with just little happy notes. And they did this for 30 years. And what happened was one of the husbands saw some withdrawals out of their bank account and, you know, this is 30 years later, you know, brought the wife in and said, what's going on here? And she said, well, time to call the meeting. So they called a meeting with all nine of the women and who had never divorced, by the way, and all nine of their husbands. And they told them what was going on and asked them to keep it a secret. And the husband said, well, let us help. So the husbands joined in, and it eventually got bigger and bigger. And they started giving away more things, and they started giving away what they started doing then was buying things. They started buying pillows and linens and personal care products and giving them to survivors at shelters. And they would just do these random acts of kindness. Well, one of their sons got wind of it. They couldn't keep the kids out. They got wind of it, and they still wanted to keep it secret. So what they did was they actually told their kids about it. And one of the kids ran a restaurant, and he said, well, why don't you take it to the next level? You've been giving away these hundreds and thousands of these pound cakes. Why don't you start making them, selling them to make a profit? We'll set up a website and all of that kind of stuff, and we'll use the money, you know, to do it on a bigger scale. They agreed to do that, and what they do now is the nine nanas go in at 4 o'clock in the morning, and from 4 to 7, they bake all of the pound cakes. hundreds a day now are being ordered through this website. They bake all of the pound cakes.
I want a pound cake.
I know. They bake all the pound cakes before the restaurant opens, so they're not in their way. So they, these nine women still get up at 4 in the morning every morning, go in and do it. They give treats. Apparently, the UPS stops there first, and they give them a pound cake every day. So the UPS driver gets a treat, and he stops there first, and they've been doing this now.
They give a pound cake to the UPS driver?
Yes, and apparently
he's big as a house.
He sometimes gives it away to his people on his route. So now what they do is they're still doing this, and I don't have the website. I'm going to have to look it up. But get this, after 35 years, they have contributed almost $1 million to their local community. So there's good things that these women did anonymously for all those years, and the only reason they got caught was one of the husbands picked up on it. But they did that in secret for that long. So that's what my Daily Winnie is. A happy story to the nine Nanas. And
yay.
Now it's your turn.
My Daily Winnie goes out to a local figure here in our neighborhood in Ocala, Florida, who is responsible for improving the general attitude of the entire neighborhood and recruiting folks who love horses from all over the world to come and live here and join in the fun. And that would be Glenn's brother, Wayne. It says, happy birthday, Wayne. I lovingly refer to him as the neighborhood figure.
I had to give him the happy birthday.
Yeah.
Well, happy birthday, Wayne. By the way, you can find them at The Nine Nanas on Facebook. The Nine Nanas. And it's the number nine. You can find them over on Facebook.
Yeah.
So happy birthday to Wayne. He's the youngest of the four of us. So he hasn't reached that magical age yet, like I reached last year. So he's going to hit it. He's going to hit it soon. Well, we have a not so happy story, but I do want to mention it. And our adopted bug Callie asked me to bring this up today, and that everybody could give prayers to Raymond Bogado. He is an exercise rider in New York that Callie knows. She's our adopted bug and exercise rider that rides for the Pletcher organization up there. Well, apparently Raymond is one of the first guys that Callie met when she went into the program and he really helped her out. He really helped her get through it. They became good friends and still are good friends. Well, Raymond had an accident yesterday on the track. Apparently what happened is he was riding one of Nick Zito's horses, a horse by the name of Ricochet Court, and they were riding it with another horse, and they were on the turf course, and apparently Bogado's horse broke down badly in his forelegs approaching the quarter pole, which meant he went down on his forelegs, and Bogado went over the top. And he apparently laid motionless for several minutes before the ambulance was able to get to him. They flew him to Albany Medical Center, and he is in critical condition. According to Callie, he has fractured his C1 and his C2 vertebrae, as well as multiple other thoracic vertebrae fractures. So he broke his back in several places. And he's apparently was well-liked by everybody. Nick Zito actually said, I love this kid. He's the best care possible at the Albany Medical Center. I have to respect the family's privacy. His mom's still in Puerto Rico. So they actually suspended the remainder of Monday's session following the incident, and nobody else was allowed to ride on the track. So we wish the best to Raymond, and our prayers are with him, and we ask you to do the same. And we'll try and keep you up to date on his condition. And we have a Wheel of Trivia.
I'm sure Callie.
Yeah, Callie will let us know. And she is doing great, by the way. We haven't done an update on her lately. Her ankle seems to be healed. She's riding many horses a day and enjoying the heck out of being in New York. And I guess they'll start thinking in the next couple of months about heading to Florida again, down to Miami. Why don't you talk about the Wheel of Trivia? Well, I get a drink here.
The EquityMFG.com Wheel of Trivia again tomorrow, as usual, where we will take a number of callers who do their best to answer reasonably easy trivia questions or reasonably difficult trivia questions. That usually depends on how you answer. And when they do that, they get to spin the wheel, win an awesome prize. So get make sure that you put our number on speed dial. It's 347-637-3238, and we play the EquityMFG.com Wheel of Trivia beginning at about 10 minutes past. And then we usually go to 9:20, 9:30 or so. So don't be afraid to call in if you're not able to get to your phone until a few minutes past, because as callers come into the line and then back out again, lines open up.
Yeah, we had a lot of callers last week, new callers from all over the country, a lot of people getting
up. I think
up
we at, set a record.
The, yeah, we did. I think yeah, it was we, like 25
calls. I had to
scroll
up and down a lot.
It was like 25 calls on there. We can actually, with the system we have, now Jennifer never wants to see this happen, but we can actually take...
No.
We can take up to 500 callers at a time, but... It just with 25 was hard to keep for me even to keep track of who I was taking and when I was taking them. We're going to take our first commercial break while Jennifer lines up our first guest, who I believe is there. Jennifer, you can check on that. And we'll be right back with Scott Trees, one of my favorite guests here on the Horse Radio Network, talking about equine photography and what he has been up to lately. Hi, Glenn here with the Horse Radio Network, and I am with Debbie from Equestrian Collections with the Equestrian Collections Product of the Week.
Hi, Glenn. You know, every month I try and find a unique product to feature, something that I think is really cool that I have used or a good friend of mine has used. And this month, I'm featuring the Amigo Fly Rider. Now, I was on a trail ride the other day at a wildlife area that is very buggy because it's down along the Rappahannock River. And I saw a lady using one of these on her Belgian. And I said to her, do you like that? And she said, absolutely. It has made a world of difference with how and where I can ride my horse. And so a little bell went off in my head, and I said, let's look into this. And sure enough, it looks like if you have a horse that has some problems with bugs, or, again, it's fly season out there on the trails or in the ring, if a horse is, especially some of the thoroughbreds that are real touchy about things like that, this is apparently fabulous for that situation. And from what they tell me, this really works. So if you're, I have people calling me a lot and they say, my horse is, you know, what fly spray to use in the ring. And I'm thinking this might be the answer to a lot of people's problems, particularly seasonally. You know, when they, during the fall, early, late summer, early fall, and those big bugs come out and might be stinging your horse on the trail or even in the ring. This might be something that you should look into. It's the Amigo Fly Rider.
I know we would have loved to have that during greenhead season when we lived in Massachusetts, which was in July for about 3 weeks, and you just could not go outside.
Like, yes, and I'm thinking, you know, you're in Florida, and this would be perfect for, I'm sure it would help with mosquitoes. This lady just couldn't stop talking about what a difference it had made in her horse's life and her ability to use him. So I thought, this is what people need to know about.
Very good. The Amigo Fly Rider. Now, if they could only get it that it actually covers the human, too, we'd be in good shape.
We're working on that.
EquestrianCollections.com, Amigo Fly Rider. Well, our next guest has been around the world. His name is Scott Trees. He is an equine photographer, one of the best in the world, and one of our favorite guests here on the Horse Radio Network. We just love getting caught up with Scott. And he has a webinar coming up that we thought we would tell you about as well. But first, we want to get caught up with Scott and find out what buggy places he's been to in the world. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning. How are you doing?
All right. I was listening to that commercial going, well, I am sure you have been in some places where you wished you were covered in head to toe in something that would protect you from bugs.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, no, definitely. More than once.
I was thinking about
that. The worst thing is fire ants.
Fire ants are
the worst thing. I mean, I was doing a shoot in Florida one time and wasn't paying attention, was wearing shorts. And you know how those little nasty things are.
Yep.
And I was kneeling down on the grass and on a mound of sand, and all of a sudden, I think they all kind of get, okay, everybody in place. Okay, we bite on three. One, two, three. And, man, I had 37 bites on my shin. And it was just like, you know, those in that part of the country, whenever you go down on the ground, you definitely got to be careful for those sons of guns. I wish somebody could could come up with something to eradicate them.
I'll tell you what, we have, you know, because we live in Florida now, we're very familiar with fire ants. And if people haven't been bit by a fire ant, it lasts about 2 weeks.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I'm going to tell you a trick
okay.
that I learned from a pharmacist in Florida, actually, is that it's the saliva, and if you can get ammonia on it, it will definitely, it doesn't take away the initial pain of the bite, but that god-awful scratching and festering that it does for 2 weeks afterwards eliminates it.
Oh, wow, I didn't realize that.
So keep a bottle of ammonia around and or anything that has ammonia in it, and it just pour it on it, and it will definitely, it works like a charm.
Well, you can tell when the horses lay down in a fire ant nest because you'll see them bolt up and take off running, you know, hell-bent for election around the paddock, and you know that they've just laid down in a fire ant nest. You think they learn, but...
Well, I'll tell you what, I did the same thing. I was up and gone.
Yeah, you do have to be very careful where you walk, where you know, everything you do down here. And you know what? They make this fire ants powder. You put it on the nest, and it's supposed to kill the... It doesn't kill the fire ants. They just move about 4 feet over.
Moves.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just tell the neighborhood's gone to hell. We're going to have to move.
That's right. Trying to build a new apartment. So what have you been up to since we talked last? Where have you been?
Well, I haven't been around a lot of places. I'm home a little more now. I'm kind of at that stage of my career. I'll be traveling more in the fall again. Looks like I'm going to go to Uruguay, working on that now, and then I'll go back to the Middle East for a little bit. But sort of working on some of my own projects. I'm really putting a lot of energy into my online teaching classes and my actual location workshops. And as you mentioned, I'm going to give a webinar tonight and again on Thursday, which is going to be the first of actually a series of free webinars I'll be giving. This one this evening is called A Primer on Equine Photography for Marketing. And basically, in all my years of being involved with shooting, I think as we've discussed before, I don't do just horses. I do a lot of commercial work as well. And in working with art directors and advertising people in the commercial world, I've gleaned a lot of things from them about how to use pictures and the importance of pictures and what a picture needs to accomplish. So this evening's program will discuss a little bit of just the background about marketing in general and how photography is used in marketing, kind of using the car industry and the fashion industry as examples, how that can apply to horses, what kind of images work for advertising in today's market. And also then, when do you hire a professional and how to find a good one? And knowing that with today's technology, a lot of people are going to try and do this themselves, I talk about when that's appropriate and offer some pointers to help them in those efforts. So it'll cover a lot of territory. And as you said, it's free. People can go either to my website, treesmedia.com, or they can email me to scott@treesmedia.com, and I can get them information as to how to register.
Do you think that with social media today that photography has even become more important? I'm saying this because, you know, we have all seen those photographs that go viral. You know, we didn't have that viral thing years ago. You didn't have you took photographs, they were in a magazine and that was pretty, or a newspaper, and that was it. You know, that was going viral if you actually had somebody pay you to put it in their magazine or newspaper. That was your form of viral. But now, businesses are kind of, a lot of them are relying on something going viral for their marketing. Now, whether I agree that that's a good business strategy, I don't know.
What's going to go viral? I mean, one of the problems that we're dealing with today, and I touch on it a little bit this evening, is that, you know, today everybody and their uncle is a photographer. I mean, it's hard to find somebody today that doesn't call themselves a professional photographer. And because it's become so much easier to take pictures, there's become kind of this universal, well, I can do it. And there's always been an attitude about horses. Oh, it's just a horse. It can't be that hard. And then people find out that it is. And what happens is, and one of the things I point out in advertising, is that there's nothing that's going to ruin a good product faster than a bad picture. And one of the things I've seen is there is a proliferation of a lot of average, good enough kinds of stuff out there that really doesn't flatter a horse, but because they can take it and because they got it out there, they can show it. And so there's that fine line between, okay, yes, you know, I know you're proud that you took your picture, I know you're proud of your horse, but make certain that that picture you put out there is a good one, because it's never going to go away. It's going to be out there forever. And you really have to be careful with that. And, you know, but I've had like one of the pictures on my Facebook page that has gone, I think the most viral, was a shot I took over in Cairo, and I happened to be at a stable, and the stallion, as a matter of routine, several times a day, would rear, put his feet through the front bars of the stall, and rest so he could get a better angle to see the mares. Now, I put that picture on my Facebook page and said, you know, before you all panic, this horse was not hurt. He does this every day. I wish I'd taken video of it. I should have. He does this every day. And, but this is how he looks at mares. And that thing went everywhere. So you never know. But yes, I mean, social media has changed things, but you still, especially if you're trying to promote a stallion or a sale horse or something, you've got to make certain you've got a good picture, because a bad picture can kill a sale. Or you know, the other venue that I talk about a little bit in marketing is that, you know, pictures, a picture's job is to get attention. I mean, we are now inundated with over 5,000. It used to be you got 500 ads a day. Now it's close to 5,000 a day with social media and email and TV and radio and magazines and billboards and blah, 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 blah. And so, you know, the pictures that stop and get attention are the ones that are a little different. And the challenge with horses is coming up with that little different shot, because they're horses and there's only so much that you can do safely.
Yeah. And that got me to thinking, talking about a bad picture or a so-so picture. And that does not just apply to people who are marketing, for some reason, the live horse. The number of times I have come across new products or new companies, and I look at their print advertising or their advertising on a website, and the pictures are either so-so or, worse yet, bad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I just keep going. They're not going to gain customers. They're going to literally lose customers, because that first impression was of a poor quality photograph that didn't show you the product properly. You're losing customers actively. You're not just not gaining. So this applies to anybody who needs to market anything that you could take a picture of.
Anything,
really.
Anything in marketing. You're absolutely right. And one of the things that I have seen a lot in the trade pubs lately of the horse world, and it concerns me, I mean, as a working pro, you kind of go, huh? But good enough has become acceptable. And it's like, oh, that's good enough. Let's use it. Let's save money. The ads are going to cost X amount of dollars. Let's not hire somebody to come shoot it because blah, blah, blah. This is good enough. And what happens is people need to realize that they're out there competing with the people that are hiring the top level pros, that are putting their those kinds of pictures in a magazine, that makes their pictures look even worse. And you know, I understand the economy of it all. It's not inexpensive to have, you know, photographers come shoot. But you know, my approach has always been to try and get something different and to make certain that, you know, that my client gets a return on their investment. My goal has never been to have the most pictures in a magazine. My goal has been, if it's just one picture in the magazine, I hope it's the one you stop and look at when you first make that thumb through the magazine and go, what's new this month? And, you know, that's the purpose. The purpose of a picture is to get attention, period. And look at fashion, look at car ads, look at, you know, the sports ads. I mean, they're trying to sell you, reach you emotionally. And our market, our equine market is female driven. It's 85% women. Women buy based more on emotion than men do. The trainers want to see what the horse looks like, but the women want to feel what that horse is.
Well, there's
and
one.
So I take my pictures for women and always have.
One of the websites that comes to mind when you're talking about pictures get attention and is Pinterest. I mean, there's a whole website built on that right there.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we're. The ability to share visual media is like it never has been before. I mean, and I've, you know, we all get those emails from friends of, you know, inspiring pictures of the day, and I've seen some phenomenal photography that I would never have seen if somebody hadn't sent it to me. I mean, it is And on the upside of that, there's some amazing photography that's being shared now. The flip side of that coin is there's a lot of junk out there, you know. And, you know, I see a lot on Facebook. I mean, I really don't care, you know, that you ate bacon and eggs this morning. And it looks appetizing, but I really don't need to see it. So, you know, there's a lot of that stuff going on out there, too. But it's, you know, the key is that, and that's part of what in my whole teaching series is that I know people are going to want to try and do this. And, you know, we've talked a lot. I'm willing to tell you anything I know. I have no secrets. I'm still going to take pictures the way I do, and you're going to take the pictures the way you do.
Right.
So I'm more than willing to offer pointers to try and help people have better success. And that's kind of why I've got these. My online classes now are being converted into on-demand video so that people can go in and sign in and watch the classes at their leisure. And so I'm slowly transferring my whole library into an on-demand venue.
Well, and you've been very good about that. You've worked with us on Horse Tip Daily. If you want to hear a bunch of Scott's tips over on Horse Tip Daily, you can hear them there. You've been very good about sharing what you know and trying to bring on a next generation of photographers who are using more than their phones and, you know, are doing it a little better than most of us do. Otherwise, it's going to become a lost art at some point here.
It is. I mean, I'm always glad to see I'm actually mentoring a lot of younger photographers. I mean, you know, I'm older than I care to admit and been doing this longer than I care to admit. But, you know, I'm always excited to see young people get involved. The problem is that it's an expensive hobby and it's an even more expensive business. And as I tell people in a business class I teach every year about photography, if you want to make a million in photography, start with two.
Yeah.
And it's the flip side of that coin is as any venue is, it's not just the artistic side, it's the business side. And what gets a lot of really talented photographers is that they really don't understand the business side and they underprice themselves and they can't afford to stay in business. And so, you know, there's that element of, there's a lot of people that want to be photographers, and I would never discourage anybody from following the dream, and I mentor them all, but I make them very aware of the business side of it as well. It's difficult, especially today. It's a tough market. It's a tough market.
Well, if you want to catch this free webinar, you can find it. It's called A Premiere on Equine Photography for Marketing that Scott puts on. You can go to treesmedia.com to find details, and also we'll put the sign-up link over on our Facebook page at Horses in the Morning, too. I promise we won't put a picture with it, okay, because it'll be crappy if we do. So, you don't have to worry about that, Scott. All right, Scott, thank you so much.
I'll go ahead and put it up there, and then I can use it in my class and critique it, Glenn, and that would give me a critiquing exercise.
Yeah, and I'm sure you'd be very happy to tell everybody it was mine. Thanks, Scott. I'll talk to you again
soon. Thank you. I always enjoy being on your show. I appreciate you having me on.
All right. See you, Scott. Well, we're going to take a break for a commercial, and then we're going to be back to learn a little bit about the women's Harvard polo team. We're going to have Danielle with us, who plays on the team, and I'm excited. We haven't talked about collegiate polo at all here on the show, so it'll be something new for us. We'll be back in 1 minute.
Here, host of the Horse Tip Daily Show on the Horse Radio Network. The way consumers interact with the brands they have trusted for years and those they are about to fall in love with for the first time is becoming more and more mobile, literally, and will continue to do so for the foreseeable future. Podcasts or internet radio shows like this one combine the new consumer preference for on-demand information and entertainment with the power of niche market audiences. Advertising on the Horse Radio Network podcasts allows you to reach the equestrian consumer using today's preferred on-demand delivery system. It's cost-effective and flexible, able to reinforce your existing marketing and social media strategies. To learn more about advertising on this show or any of the shows on the Horse Radio Network, contact us at 859-951-2022 or you can email us at glenn@horseradionetwork.com. That's Glenn with two N's @horseradionetwork.com. Come and join the Horse Radio Network family. You'll enjoy the ride.
You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn the Geek here with Coach Jen on a shortened version of this Tuesday show. We are with you live. We will be here till 10 today as I have four shows to record and we're just hoping that my voice holds out. So we will be here with you to 10. Don't forget that we are doing the EquityMFG.com Wheel of Trivia tomorrow. And we also will have Really Bad Ads. Jamie will be back on Friday. Helena is helping us out tomorrow. Jamie will be back on Friday. So we have a whole bunch of good shows for you. And, of course, next week on Tuesday is the Tack Talk with Equus Now is back for its once-a-month appearance. And then we have the Endurance Show. So Tuesdays are all live now here on Horses in the Morning. So, Jennifer, you have our guest on the line.
I do. As you know, folks, that I am a big polo fan. I got the taste for polo when I lived in Massachusetts and got to watch the Myopia Hunt Club team play a good bit and also took a couple of polo lessons, and I was hooked. It is a fantastic spectator sport for those who don't want to participate. So I got a hold of Danielle Lucy, who is a member of the Harvard Collegiate Polo Team, and a junior at Harvard studying German, I believe. And welcome to the show, Danielle.
Hi, thank you for having me.
This is very interesting because you were gone for quite a bit of the summer, and it had to do with polo. So fill us in on what your big polo adventure was this year.
That is correct. So annually, the Harvard polo team is traditionally invited to various clubs around Europe to play in the summer. And this year, we actually were so lucky as to be invited all the way to Asia. So
oh, wow.
A club in Mongolia, the Genghis Khan Polo Club, invited us. So we went and played there. Lots of fun chuckers on tiny
I was going to say.
The natural Mongolian.
Did you use their little ponies they use for the race?
We use those, exactly. So that was an adventure in itself, I would say.
Do you have to use shorter mallets?
Definitely. So normally with the polo ponies we use in intercollegiate polo, you use a 51 to 53-inch mallet. But when we were in Mongolia, we had to use a 44-inch mallet, which obviously
oh, wow.
is a huge difference. So if that puts in perspective how tiny they are.
Were they fun?
So much fun. I got along great with the horses, but the biggest thing I found was that they have a mind of their own, and you just have to kind of agree with them and let them do whatever they want. Then you have so much fun.
Okay, the ball's going that way, my pony's going that way, and we're just going to enjoy the ride.
Exactly. That's exactly how it works.
And occasionally, if you get near the ball, you can take a whack at it.
Pretty much.
That's funny. Now, what about the people there?
So a lot of the people there obviously are nomadic. I don't know if the listeners are familiar with Mongolia.
Yeah, we've talked about it because of the race. We cover the race every year. So,
great.
So we have talked
exactly.
about the race,
so,
yeah.
So at the Nodon Festival, we actually had an exhibition polo match. So there are photos of us playing in front of the finish line. So it looks like there's hundreds of thousands of people watching the Harvard polo team play a local Mongolian team. But in actuality, they're watching the finish of one of these endurance Nodon races.
But
so
look,
I thought that was pretty funny.
And biggest crowd you ever had.
Made us look a little bit more important than we are.
Now, what about the food? I've heard mixed reviews on the food from people who have gone there for the race.
So I liked all the food that I was offered. My favorite was the traditional yak stew. But I think what is more interesting than the food was they have fermented mare's milk, which is a very traditional, I guess, social aspect of the races and just culture in Mongolia. So it's served in a silver bowl that is passed around, and it's literally, like I said, fermented, slightly alcoholic, quite sour. I thought it tasted a lot like fruit yogurt. I personally liked it, but
So it's like drinking rotten milk.
Were you among the minority that loved it? So, but when you signed up to go to school at Harvard, did you intend to play polo, or was that something that, oh, look, they have a polo team?
I didn't at all. So that was kind of a very new thing. I didn't know very much about polo at all. I had seen one game actually in Keene Valley, New York, which is kind of upstate, middle of nowhere. But I grew up riding horses. I did some eventing, and my mom has Icelandic horses. So when I was looking at colleges, I considered joining an equestrian team, but since Harvard didn't have one, I actually didn't really think twice about it and started playing club soccer, actually. And it wasn't until I ran into one of the girls on the polo team, and she found out that I had riding experience, that she encouraged me to come to a practice. And ever since then, I was hooked.
Now, what kind of riding did you do before polo came into your life?
So I grew up riding Icelandic horses, which are gated horses. And then I also did a bit of eventing. So, you know, cross country, stadium, jumping, and dressage. And so, yeah, but I hadn't ridden in probably 5 years. I had ridden once a year. I went fox hunting with my mother. But other than that, I was a little bit out of practice. So it was really fun to get back into the swing of things and pursue polo.
So this was kind of an obvious fit for you, because judging by the types of riding you did before polo came into your life, there was a little bit of an adrenaline junkie in there already.
Definitely. And also what I found why I loved polo was that I'd grown up playing a lot of different sports like tennis, golf, and like I said, soccer. So you combine all the aspects of those different sports, the hand-eye coordination, the game strategy of soccer, and then even the checking from sports like hockey are all combined into this horse sport, and it's pretty thrilling.
Well, now tell us about, do you ride your own horses there, or do they have a string right there at Harvard and you use their horses? How's that work?
So at Harvard, and what is common with all the other intercollegiate teams that have polo teams, you actually play the school's horses. So Harvard owns all the horses we play in games. And so we go out probably 3 or 4 times a week at least to take care of the horses at night. We do all our own work, and we have someone who feeds them in the morning, of course, because we have to do school at some point. But at night we feed them, we tack them, we take care of them, and get to meet the horses at school, and obviously to bond with them and pick your favorites.
And you have a favorite, don't you? Tell us about your favorite.
So Noelia is probably my favorite horse. She was actually injured when I first joined the team, but last spring she came back, and someone told me she's a little bit more difficult, pretty hot, pretty fun, but I had a great time. She's a really powerful horse and pretty much has a mind of her own as well, which I like because she's competitive just like I am. And we'll go into a game, and she knows exactly what to do. So it's really fun when you make a connection with a horse like that.
Now, you have a very generous and very famous sponsor that a lot of people probably aren't aware of. He was actually a graduate of Harvard in 69 and is an avid polo player, and that's Tommy Lee Jones.
Yes, it is. So, like you said, Tommy Lee Jones, he graduated from Harvard. He actually played football while he was at Harvard, but after he graduated, he got into the sport of polo and now has been very generous in giving back to the team. So he donates kind of his older horses to the team, their extra tack that they have, and also, which I think is vital to our program, is he invites us to his farms in Texas and Florida, and actually last winter even invited us to Argentina, which was obviously a really exciting opportunity.
And now be honest now, if my co-host Jamie was here this morning, because she loves polo, but mainly because of the hot polo players. So be honest, were you getting into this to ride horses or meet hot polo players? Oh, I think we lost our guest, Jennifer. She just dumped off.
We wanted to.
I know. I just got to the most important question. Why don't you see if you can get her back? But yeah, that was the question I was waiting to ask the entire time. Was that question? And then she gets dropped off because if I didn't ask that question, Jamie is going to be mad at me. So I knew I had to. We were having problems with her connection all morning. I don't know if she's on a phone, a cell phone, or what the story is, but we'll get her back because we need to get an answer to that from Danielle about the hot polo players. I mean, you've got to go to Argentina. That's what that whole trip's about in the first place. She also apparently concentrates on German. I think that's her major. We'll have to find out that too. Does she actually want to go on to play polo from then on? Well, Danielle, do we have you back?
Yes, I'm back.
Sorry about that
interruption.
That's okay. I was about to ask you the most important question the listeners want to know. My co-host Jamie, if she would be here, she loves polo for one reason, the hot polo players. Did you join polo to start riding horses again, or did you join polo to meet hot polo players?
Well, I would say it's a combination of the two. You know, I love the horses, but also they're, like you said, any attractive boys. So that definitely is a draw to the sport.
You went to Argentina. I mean, and that's where they seem to have a mold, and they cast this mold, and what comes out of it is these hot polo guys.
Exactly. So it was a great time. We learned a lot about polo and also got to practice a lot of our Spanish. So that was pretty exciting.
Did you find the factory where they make them? Did you actually locate the factory that they come out of? Or
I didn't locate it, but I think I was close to it because there was a lot of people in Lourdes, actually. So the factory must be located somewhere near there.
That's great. Well, now, Jennifer, I think you had another question.
That was my question.
No, was it?
You beat me to it.
Now, what do you guys play? How many games a year?
So, the combination of the women's team and the men's team, we probably play about 15 to 20 intercollegiate games. And most of our homes play in the fall because that's when we have...
I think Danielle's breaking up on us again. Do you hear that, Jennifer? Are you still there, Danielle?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, you're breaking up on us again. I don't know if we have a bad connection or what the story is today. Well, Danielle, we're going to let you go as your phone is starting to crap out on us a little bit. But we'd love to have you back. This was so much fun. We have never talked about intercollegiate polo before. Maybe what we need to do is have you, when you're at a big match sometime where there's a lot of these hot guys, we can get you on as an on-scene reporter live from the match.
Perfect. Sounds great.
All right.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Danielle. By the way, you can find out more about the Harvard Polo Team. Just look up Harvard Polo Team and the website will pop up. And you can see Danielle's picture. We'll post it on our Facebook page and also on our show notes page on Horses in the Morning for today's show notes. And we really appreciate her being here. Well, Jennifer, we have a couple of news stories before we wrap things up today here on the show. Charlotte Desjardins is back and did very well at the European Championships. If you remember, Victoria talked about the European Championships and how big a deal they are over in Europe. Well, she did very well. She set another record in the Grand Prix with her horse. excuse me. Sorry about that. I'm trying to keep it going here without losing my voice, with her horse of Allegro. So she sent another world record in the Grand Prix and then went on to win the freestyle gold. And also Great Britain took the silver medal, I believe, or bronze medal. Yep, team bronze on Thursday in the individual Grand Prix, or in the team Grand Prix, I'm sorry. So she was very excited. She actually beat out her mentor again, just like in the Olympics, Carl Hester, who must be getting tired of being beat by his student. I'm sure he's very happy about it, but there's got to be a little bit of the inside that goes, geez, let me win something. So Charlotte keeps her reign up, and everybody in England is very excited. I'm sure if we get a visit tomorrow from Horse and Country TV from Victoria, we'll hear all about that because I'm sure she's very excited. Speaking of England, Prince William, and speaking of England and speaking of polo, one of Prince William's pals, Aldolfo Cambiasso, is one of the world's best polo players and a friend of Prince William and Harry. and he has decided that he's going to create a polo team and string by cloning them. So he has actually cloned 100 of his favorite horses and some that can be competing in the sport later this year. He's obviously a millionaire because what did we determine? This runs about $125,000 a pop. For cloning? Isn't that what it was?
Right.
Now I wonder if you get a discount.
He's got the $1 million polo team.
Yes. Yeah. I wonder if you get a discount if you do like 10 at a time, you know, or 100 at a time, if you get a discount.
Volume discount.
Yeah, you get a volume discount if you're a millionaire polo player. So apparently he worked with this guy who actually, I think, was part of the lawsuit against the AQHA out of Texas, the guy, the oil tycoon out of Texas, Alan Meeker, and... He worked with him to get this cloning done. The extensive cloning suggests an entire polo team could be riding clones derived from a single pony within a few years. He says that he can see the likeness to the horse called Lappa. He can see the likeness in that this horse used to pin his ears back and lunged at him on occasion. And apparently all of these clones do it too. So, you know, that begs the next question. Why would you clone a horse that does that? But apparently he was also a good polo player. So.
See, what they don't mention in the article, Glenn, is that every polo pony in the entire barn does that.
Does that, yeah. It's something they all do.
They're very similar to racehorses in that respect.
Yeah. So we're going to be seeing a lot of cloned polo ponies coming up soon here. Now, it's going to be hard to tell them apart, my guess is. I don't know if they all look similar. You think they would all look similar. So maybe this is what remember the Canadian Mounties, they breed their own horses so that they get all those black horses that look alike
Canadians
with no color.
Use this.
Yeah, they should start cloning and that make that whole lot easier than what they go through now to get all these horses.
Absolutely.
It's an option, something they could take a look at. Couple other things too. She was talking about, you know, going over to Mongolia to play polo. Well, there was an article put out by CNN yesterday about some of the odd horsey events that take place around the world. And they came up with the top five of the world's craziest horse festivals. Some of these we've talked about because not only are they crazy, they're just obscene and probably cruel to the horses. But there's one in Siena, Italy. 2 days each year, the pretty town of Siena in northern Tuscany is transformed into an elaborate medieval racetrack. We actually saw a video of this last year when it happened. This pretty town in Tuscany, and they have the town square, you know how it's surrounded by all the old buildings and everything, and that it's all like cobblestone streets. Well, they line the streets with people, and what happens is these riders go hell-bent for election around this cobblestone track for three laps, and this race is dated back to the 17th century, and each rider represents a local neighborhood, but it's not been a favorite of animal rights people or anybody, I think, who cares about horses, because a lot of them wipe out. So it's not been very well covered over the years. And then there's the Luminaries Festival in Spain, which we heard about on the driving radio show of all thing. And it was talked about by, David, I'm trying to think of the name of the guest. David Saunders, one of our favorite guests, who was the coachman for the Queen for 20 years, the Queen of England. He went there and actually got to go to the Luminaries Festival. He said it's a really interesting thing. He said it involves fire and horses, and it's this big, huge festival with a lot of food and everything. But one of the things they do is they ride horses over blazing tree branches as part of the festival, and it's an effort to purify and protect the animals. Now, how burning the horses' undersides is protecting the animals, I'm not quite sure. And it's been very controversial. It dates back 500 years, and it's held on the eve of St. Anthony's Day.
Wow, I'm looking at pictures. They're not just leaping over a single burning branch.
No, it's like a bonfire.
They're galloping
bonfire.
Through giant heaps of brush. This is bizarre.
It's like a bonfire, and you know I can see why it has problems because with the animal rights groups.
It's bizarre.
I know. Again, I didn't say these were normal. And then there's the white turf of Switzerland, and that is they have a very cool festival up there in Lake St. Moritz. every year, and it includes ski-joring. And, of course, we've talked about ski-joring a number of times. We've had some ski-jurers on the show. It's a lot less dangerous than jumping through big bonfires through of sticks. And apparently champagne is the key to ski-joring in Switzerland because it's so darn cold. It's around minus 20 Celsius, and fur coats are the order of the day, and apparently champagne is drunk from morning until night at this particular festival.
That makes sense. Yeah. Next one up here, it looks like we've got the Pasola Festival in Indonesia. So this is a glam of snow. In the island of Sumba, teams go head-to-head on elaborately decorated horses throwing out blunt spears at each other.
Yes.
Holy cow.
Yes. The object here is to draw as much blood.
At each other.
Well, that's right. The object is they believe that every drop of blood spilled will bring a good harvest. So what they're trying to do is get each other to bleed a lot. So the object here is to hurt each other. Believe it or not. So
wow, they just keep getting more bizarre, Glenn.
It's an ancient ritual that dates back on the island of Sumba hundreds of years, apparently. So it's not a good doesn't sound like much fun to me. It doesn't sound like a very fun thing to be nominated. Do you think they draw lots like they did in the Hunger Games
in Hunger Games?
Yeah, like they did in the Hunger Games, and that person has to go out there and get spears thrown at his head. I don't know how they pick. One of the others that's not so bloody is in Japan. It's the Soma no Mi Festival in Japan. It's a 1,000-year-old festival, and it's a wild horse chase as well. It sees samurai's horsemen compete in different challenges from racing over a 1-kilometer track to battling over sacred flags. They all dress in their ancient armor and their helmets and their swords, and the warriors appear to have stepped straight out of the 10th century. So that's probably a very pretty festival. The object there is not
that
to draw.
That's a lot more tame.
Yeah.
Way more tame.
Well, it's not to at least draw blood from each other. So bloodletting is not part of that festival. So there's top five craziest festivals in the world involving horses. And I am running out of voice here, so let's just call it a day. We appreciate you stopping by. We thank our guests for being here as well, for Scott, and also our guest Danielle for joining us from the Harvard Polo Team. It was fun to have her on. She was a good sport. We're going to play the show out today. And of course, we'll be back tomorrow with the EquityMFG.com Wheel of Trivia. Be sure to call in. We have lots of terrific prizes and some new ones, I believe, Jennifer, too. So we have some new prizes on the wheel. We had some winners last week, and I'm sure we'll have some winners again this week. And we look forward to hearing from new callers as well. That's it. That's all I've got. Anything else I forgot?
Play us out, Glenn.
All right. We're going to play it out with a song today. And I know this is a favorite of several of our listeners have brought it up in the past. Language of Love by Mary Ann Kennedy. And we'll be back here tomorrow morning live. Thank you for joining us.
The language of love is what I understand when you reach for me with a gentle hand. Actions speak louder, words aren't enough in the language of love. Not spoken with the tongue, it comes from the heart, it's heard by everyone. Crosses all borders around the world, the universal language of person, hey. future, every moment with every breath. We can send a thought to heal, and what we give is what we'll get. You spoke the language of love.